Want to take out that piece of land because what we're going to do later is we're going to put buildings on these land, and we don't want to put buildings where the eminent domain would have already taken the parcel away. So we cleared the, so we leave only land masses or parcels that are not sitting on top of roads or rivers, and we can actually build on. Okay, now we add in some buildings. And again, we're trying to do some of this randomly so that we're not putting buildings on every one of them. Basically, what we're doing here, and it may not make sense, but we're trying to throw in as many functions as we can into this so that you can see all the different things. We basically take the center point of our parcel and the function st point on surface will give me a point on the surface. I create a I create a bounding circle around. Well, no, I take the centroid. Okay, so I have the center of my my polygon, and I take a point on the surface, and then I group them together basically with this collect. I create a convex hull, which in this case, since you only have two points, it just creates a line segment. And then I buffer it to give my buildings some width. So this actually makes all the buildings look like hot dogs. So you got land masses that are of different shape, and on them you have these rectangular-looking buildings. And this is just, we're going to add people into our regular table. And this is just a cross drawing, and we're saying people who have more kids live in bigger houses. Okay. And actually, yeah, let me have Regina do this. This is OpenJump, which was mentioned in the previous talk. This is a very good tool for just viewing your data, and we want to show this because the next slide will be a picture. Do you have anything to say about OpenJump?
No, I think it's pretty much OpenJump. OpenJump is a good tool. It's a good ad hoc tool for writing spatial queries and seeing the output of it. That's what we normally use it for. But it has other features, like you can draw features on it, and it'll give you like the well-known text representation of it, and then you can input that into your spatial database, and you can also export into different formats. So yeah, it's also got thematic map capability, which is nice. Go to the next slide. So this is what our world looks like. I mean, our town that we built. So the land part, that's sort of the color theming. So we gave each type of land a different color. And we made the buildings all look the same. And the roads, we made them slightly different colors, and also the lakes and the rivers.
Right. So, I mean, you'll see that we didn't do a very good job with our land creation. All of our parcels are sort of diamond-shaped, even after all their randomness. And you know, we got lakes that are triangles and rivers that start and in the middle of nowhere. But it's enough for us to write queries against. All right, so first query, let's look at the overlap of land. So this is sort of what I mentioned earlier, where since we created all the land by random, there could be land that's just sitting on top of each other. And the useful function here is the ST union. It'll basically take two land area. Once you perform the union on them, it'll create basically one geometry. It'll dissolve two geometries into one that are sitting on top of each other. So if we look at all the ones that are, if we do calculate the total area of our land without dissolving it, and then we dissolve it, we should see that the area where we have dissolved it is much less than the total. And so the difference would be the amount of land that is sitting on top of each other that our random thingy created. And same thing, we can do that with buildings. And okay, so now we found that a lot of our land is sitting on top of each other. So what we want to do is we're just trying to find out what kind of, when they're sitting on top of each other, did I actually create land that is sitting right on top of each other or whether they're overlapping? And this is the function that tells me overlap are land that's not exactly on top of each other, but just overlap each other by some finite region. And then equal is where they're actually sitting on top of each other. And again, by the screwy way that we generated the data, we don't have any overlap, but we have we just have land mass that is sitting on top of each other.
Yeah.
So that picked up.
Take up the same amount of space.
Okay. So given that we know there are land masses sitting on top of each other, we're simply going to take people that we put into these land masses that are sitting on top of each other and just assign them to... So if you have two or three pieces of land sitting on top of each other, we're just going to pick one in this case, I think it's arbitrary depending on the order. We're just going to pick one and call that the land mass, and we're going to stick all the residents that we've assigned to all the different land masses that's sitting on top of each other into this one fundamental one. So that's, if you got people, if you can think in a real-world situation where two boundaries are overlapping and you got people living in both, you got people living in both regions, you got the conflict region, which is people who are sitting in that zone where there's two regions that's overlapping. This is what you could do, is to assign one of them to another. And once we move the people, reassign them to the proper parcels, we're just going to remove the extraneous ones. So now we're going to be left with our surface, our world surface is going to be covered by just one land mass per area, so there won't be any overlays. So now we have all distinct. Okay. All right, this is... the building situation is a little different. We randomly created buildings. So the buildings could be sitting on top of each other as well. And for this, we actually create a new table of buildings because we cannot lose the fact of... So for example, if we have one land area and it's got a fire station on it, and we got another land area that's got a church on it, and those two happen to be the same, we want to preserve the fact that this piece of land holds both a church and a fire station. And so we create this new table, new building table, to fix what we did wrong by sort of just storing them all in an array. So at the end of this, we have a new set of buildings, but we still preserve what all the building types that were originally on the land. So instead of one land having one building type, we now have one land that could have an array of building types. Okay. And so you can ask very powerful questions now. Like, what percent of kids under age of 12 are further than an elementary school? And we use the D within, and that's what's a kilometer divided by a meter divided, it's a half a mile. And just with this simple query, you can solve a...
I guess the only thing I want to say is that the D within is actually uses a spatial index, whereas distance doesn't. So that's why we use the D within for the where clause. But then when you actually want the distance, then you would put it in the select. So you put the ST distance in the select if you wanted the distance. And the D within you would use to filter your set of data.
Okay, and just more questions. You can actually say, well, let's look at all the land that's got some building on it and actually find out how much of the land is left. And that's pretty much using the ST difference. And you got your land mass and you got your building, which takes up a portion of it. And you can say, hey, what's left? What's left to build on for each parcel in the town? Okay. And we can get a little bit more. We can ask fancier questions, like we want to know what kind of buildings, 100 meters of our big river, and then within 500 meters of the closest road. And we can actually interpolate our address to actually get the exact street number and the actual address of where that fits this condition. So you can actually pull out exact addresses. And let me see, the key feature here is the interpolation. Where is that function? Where is it? Okay. It's on the second line, ST line locate point. That actually gives you a percentage of the, suppose you have a line stream and you have a point that's somewhere on it, that will actually be able to give you the relative distance of the whole segment. So you can think of it as a fraction. If you think of the whole thing as, say, 100%, by looking at ST line locate point, you give it the centroid, the street number, and another point, then you can actually tell that new point where along this 100% of a street you're on. So if it's 20%, it's at the 20th. Starting from zero, you're at the 20th percent of the street segment, and 40th, and so on. And so if you have the start and ending street numbers, as we do with Tiger data, you can actually approximate what the street number should be, given that you've located the point. So you got a line, you know, pretend this line's a street, and you know the street starts at, say, 500 and goes up to 5,000, and you got some point that's somewhere on it, and you don't know the exact address of this point, but you can use this percentage to figure out what approximately the street number should be, assuming that street numbers are proportionally laid out. And this is the result of our last query, is it actually found these exact locations, 16 Main Street, 30 Main Street, that fit that complicated condition. I mean, we're just showing it to you in this open jump output. I'm going to turn this over to Jana now.
Okay, so this one's actually using a 8.4 feature called windowing functions. And what we're doing here is that we're picking up everyone that's on Elephantine Road and we're getting their income level, and we're first sorting them by their linear location on the road. So we're using the row number function, which is a windowing function, to number them from 1 to N. And then we're using the lead and lag functions, which are also windowing functions. So the lag will give you the record before, based on whatever the order by is that you give it. And the lead will give you the record after. And actually, there are two versions of it. There's one that takes an argument, the offset, and there's one that doesn't. So we put one here, but we didn't need to because I think that's the default. But if you wanted to grab the record that was two ahead, then you'd put two there. The same with the lag. So here we're asking, well, what's the income level of the person that lives next door to me to the right and the person lives next door to the left? So that's where that prev D ink is the previous door, and then next D is the next door. And that income level is what your income is if you're living on there. Are there any questions? Yeah, if you look at that, we can actually go to the land. Yeah. Back. I mean, yeah, let's go to the land.
It's the road.
Oh, the road, yeah.
Yeah,
so if you look at the road, we have the end start and end, which is the start and end for each one.
These actually work. You can actually run these queries.
Yeah. It'll build a different town, but so you'll get different answers, but it'll be more or less the same answer. Well, if you have, like, let's say you have a line string. So if you do a line string M, you can keep that point for each point on there. And there are actually functions that will give you locate along measure. So it'll give you sort of an interpolation within those regions. So let's say you want the M between, you know, the first point and the second point in the line segment. It would give you sort of an interpolated M. So you can't do that with a single because you'd have to keep it as an array or something and then do your own interpolation. Actually, the raster part I'm not working with. I probably don't know much about it yet. It's sort of in alpha state right now. And I think it's at the point where you can load raster data. They have a Python script that you can load raster data. And it basically just piggybacks off of GDAL right now. And eventually they're going to have something like when it reaches the beta, which I think is going to be probably like 3 months from now, they'll actually have something like a SHP to raster. I mean, PGSQL to raster, raster to PGSQL. You can. The way they're setting it up, it's going to have similar functions like ST intersects ST intersection. And they're still deciding whether they're going to call RT intersection or ST intersection, but the idea is that you can actually intersect like a vector with a raster, and you get a raster back, which is like the portion of the raster that fits into that vector region. No, actually, they're not going to have it fixed. I think they're going to give you the option to set it a certain size, because I think Frank was saying something about he wants it to be fixed. And then other people are saying, well, if we're doing it for this, we don't care about it being fixed. So I haven't been following the conversation, but they have tables as to you can define whether it's fixed grid size or not. Yeah.
Right. So you have to do, at some point, you need to zero out the stuff that's not inside. I think that's the only way.
Well, if you, like, if let's say you take a square raster and then you do the intersect on where it is, you do get that other part zeroed out when you output it.
Yeah, you have to get a square raster back. Might have to be the same size. You have to be square.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's correct.
You need to be zeroed out on that. Okay.
Yeah. It's just that you would get a square back, but the other part, yeah, the remaining of the square would be zeroed out.
Right.
That's what he's saying. So, any other questions?
Okay.
No. The raster stuff is already sort of working. So if you look at I don't have Mastis. I can't even pronounce his name. Matt Mattis. He's got a blog where he gives an example of loading the data. So you can actually use it now if you want to compile yourself, you know, play around with it. But the idea is that when PostGIS 2 comes out, it's going to be fully integrated. So it's just going to be a single install. And then we have time. No, the idea is that we always try to keep at least two versions behind. So I think like the 1.3 is supported for, I forget whether it's 8.1 or 8.2.
Is the on-disk format going to be changing? Raster won't, it's not there, but the on-disk format, the other stuff, is that gonna, or the geometry format, is that going to change?
I think it's actually changed for 1.4. I'm not sure. I haven't been paying attention. I think it's slightly changed, but yeah, definitely on 2.0 they're going to, I think they're talking about aligning, which I don't really understand.
Okay. So,
yeah. So, yeah, I'm not too sure about that. And then these are just some fun examples I was playing with. I saw their example of recursive. I forget where it is. So I sort of try to throw that in using make line and make point to see what I would end up with. And then when you buffer it and then you bring it into OpenJump and theme it, it looks kind of cute. So this is the buffered Mandelbrot thing. And then this is it with the minimum bounding circle, which is a function that actually is in PostGIS 1.4. It's not in the lower versions. And this is what a convex hull looks like around a geometry. And then this is just the extent. And so these are the queries that you would use to do that. And then this is just some more examples of buffering. There's one neat thing about PostGIS buffering is that there's an extra argument that tells you the number of line segments to approximate a quarter circle. So normally it's 8. So I think it's 8 times 4 is the number of vertices you get. Is it?
Yeah.
So in this case, we're using the generate series function in PostgreSQL to come up with that with the number of segments to approximate a quarter circle. And what you end up with is you end up with hexagons and squares and things like that.
Approaches
yeah.
a circle.
Yeah. Do you have any more time?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you. too? Do we have to?
We're actually the 1.4 hasn't been released yet. That's
okay.
Supposed to be released in June.
Okay.
And then the 2.0 is supposed to come out probably.
Okay. Thank you. So this all I got here, I think, is just the VGA type connector. So, you should be able to. If it goes in. Somebody was having problems with that one too, then I just plugged him in up here if it's not going to go. Oh, there it goes. Okay.
Okay. Just attach that one. So I'm home. Okay.
So you do need to wear both, unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah. Because they're two different systems, but.
Okay. So I have to touch one. Like that? Feel like full of technology.
Yeah. Full of wires all over the place. Thanks. So it's turned on, right?
Yeah.